Welcome to the Hot Lava Podcast. Kevin A.C. Padres beat writer for the Union Tribune. I'm in New York City. There's Ryan Finley. He's in San Diego. Don't know what the weather is like there, but it's raining here. I've seen a lot of things. I've seen a downpour of like a few inches and a team plays. The fields here on the East Coast, they drain really well, but it's just hard for me to believe the Padres and Yankees will start their series tonight. But anyway, as of now, Padres-Yankees begin a three-game series. Tonight, Monday, as we tape this, Ryan, what would you like to start with?
When the Padres play, whether that's tonight or there's rain and they play tomorrow, there will be some good news back in the lineup, right? Let's start there. Jackson Merrill is nearing his return. Jake Cronenworth is inching towards a return possibly later in the week. How big are those two guys for this team?
I think in so many ways, just huge. And fortunately for the Padres, right? Or, you know, they're winning. They've won five straight. It's not like, oh, we got to get these guys back, as it often is with a team that is missing stars. They got guys back incrementally. Luis Arraez, Jason Hayward, Brandon Lockwood, or Lockridge. There it is again. Brandon Lockridge. Now, Jackson Merrill, who was their leading hitter through 10 games, not just their leading hitter, but like, the emotion, the big hits, the crucial moments. He is going to be back today. Now, I will be interested. Does he DH or something? Now, he's not coming back till he's fully healthy. So theoretically, a wet field shouldn't make a difference. But first game back, you know? So anyway, my understanding is he was coming in this morning, probably here now. When you play in the minor leagues on a rehab assignment, direct flights to anywhere are tough to come by. So he was not leaving San Antonio till this morning, is my understanding.
Okay. So if that's the case, and they do play, this would be a chance where, yeah, he'd either play center field or DH in this first game back.
Yeah, and I haven't heard anything. I didn't ask yesterday. But I was just thinking, like, man, it's raining now. It's supposed to rain through the day. Like, somehow they play. Like, really going to put him in center? But then you also look, they've slow played this. This isn't a matter of, oh, got to be careful with Jackson Merrill. So I don't know. Be interesting.
Yeah, it will be really interesting. Fernando Tatis Jr. turned back the clock a little bit at PNC Park over the weekend, reminding me of the Fernando Tatis Jr. that we first got to know, right? But back when he first came up. We could spend a week's worth of podcasts talking about what he did in the ninth inning alone on Saturday, right? But let's get into it and sort of what that means. Let's just start with his hit. You know, it's a single down the first baseline. He's busting his butt out of the box. Even though they're playing no doubles defense, he's able to turn a single into a double fairly easily. Right.
Yeah, because they were playing no doubles, right. Because that means like no fly balls over the outfielder's head. not a ground ball down the line under the third baseman. But Fernando, because he was thinking from step one, I'm getting to second base, he got to second base and really didn't even need to slide. I mean, you know, obviously needed to because that's what you do. But like the throw wasn't even close to second and it was late. I mean, that's how easily he got that double.
Right. So again, to set the stage here, there are two outs. Xander Bogaerts is up, correct?
Yes. So what happens is Fernando Tatis Jr. leads off with that double. He's on second. He's thinking, I don't make that out at third base. Let's see what Luis Arraez, right? Luis Arraez with a runner in scoring position. Well, Luis grounds out. Fernando can't advance. And so now we got one out, right? Okay, one out. Can you get to third base with Manny Machado up? Fly ball, right? And then you can score easily on a fly ball. Well, gets to 0-2. David Bednar, the pitcher, paying attention to Fernando. Fernando gets a big lead. Boom. Steals third base without a throw. Steals it on Bednar. Joey Bart, the catcher, had no chance. So then two balls, and then Manny watches a third strike. And so now you got two outs. Uh-oh, Xander Bogaerts is up. Was it? Yes. Oh, first pitch. Obviously, everyone in the ballpark, including David Bednar, the Pirates pitcher, who is prone to spike his splitter, spike his curveball. Obviously, Fernando knows that. Every player knows that. But are you also capable? Can you put the brains with the feet, with the instincts? And I have watched this play a few times from different angles, and it's just exciting, man. I know it was on TV as well, but like to watch it develop, I stood up, right? Because I was like, whoa. Obviously, I'm antsy. We got to file this sucker. Well, the game had been delayed. I was writing on deadline for a game that, you know, not as bad as the night before, but a game that was supposed to start at 1 p.m. Pacific. So I'm like, oh my gosh, now I got to sit down and type. What Fernando did when the ball hit, takes another step after having a big lead off third, no one covering. Then the ball, the second it hits off Joey Bart's glove, Fernando's going. The ball only goes a body's length, 6 feet away to the right. Joey Bart grabs it, dives back, does absolutely everything he could. It happens so quick that Bednar can't even get home. Fernando slides in. I mean, maybe this, a half a foot? He beats this diving tag by Joey Bart. It was so exciting. To me, more exciting than a steal of home. It was just a fantastic 360 feet, a run that Fernando Tatis Jr. willed by himself. Padres win 2-1.
Yep. And again, I should take a step back here. Hey, Kevin, you're not easily impressed with the game of baseball. You've watched a ton of baseball. When you say this makes the travel and the rain delays and everything else worth it because Fernando Tatis Jr. will do something every once in a while that you have never seen before. This is that, you know, and it's so funny to me. It's the same ballpark where Fernando Tatis scored on a sacrifice fly. I'm using air quotes here to second base his rookie year. That was long enough ago that the Padres were wearing blue. Fernando Tatis's hair was blonde. This is how long ago that was. To me, it's a similar kind of moment where you go, this guy's a unicorn. This guy does stuff that at least no Padre in history has ever done. And I can't think of a whole lot of major leaguers out there capable of taking over a game the way he did in the ninth inning there on Saturday.
You are correct. What's special, I would think, for Padres fans, to me as a chronicler and appreciator of moments, this won a game for a team that has World Series aspirations. In 2019, I mean, we were all blown away and enjoying the ride. And like Eric Hosmer said, it's like he's playing varsity with a bunch of JVers, as in he was referring to himself and the other players on the field as JVers, and Fernando was varsity. That's what it reminded him of. That was exciting. Oh, the potential. Well, now we're in the time when the Padres need a player like that for it to matter, for there to, you know, be a parade potentially. And now he's doing it. And he's doing it the day after I talked to him about, you know, he had 99 career steals. It had been a while. He hadn't stolen as much on his way to 100 as he did on his way to 50, because he was the fastest player in Major League history to 50 homers and 50 RBIs. I mean, I'm sorry, 50 homers and 50 stolen bases at the same time. And then the 100-100 mark, he was the seventh fastest. See, that steal was his 100th. And he had talked about, and it had been obvious. First, it was obvious when Fernando Tatis Jr. stopped diving for everything. And then it was obvious when Fernando Tatis Jr. stopped trying to turn every single into a double and every double into a triple. Remember what he used to every time he hit a double? Round second base as if he was headed to third? Well, he stopped doing that. Well, then he starts out blazing stealing bases. And it's like, wow, yeah, 40-40, way to go, going to be on pace. Well, you knew he was going to slow down because he has an eye on actually staying on the field and becoming the player that he can be. And the player he can be requires durability. And so he said that Friday, when I steal, it's going to be because we need it. Well, obviously that situation, it's because you need it. And it's like, it's just special. And like, as we remind people all the time, like the media cannot be fans of the team. But I can be fans of watching great players and watching great plays and watching great games and watching exciting games. And I'm a huge fan of that.
To me, again, as somebody who grew up here watching a lot of bad baseball, you know, there's a lot of fire sale baseball that I watch. The fact that the Padres are good, every once in a while you go, it kind of pinch yourself a little bit. It's not just that they're good, but it's that they have a guy who is, I mean, transcendent in a way. I mean, does things that other guys in baseball don't do. And after all this injury stuff, you know, and you're right, he's taking fewer chances and he's trying to be out there. Him showing that he can do it when he wants to.
Yeah.
How many athletes in Major League Baseball can turn it on like that? it was impressive. Yeah. It was 2019 again to me when he did that on Saturday. And, you know, Fernando Tatis Jr. continues to be their best player, at least until Jackson Merrill returns later today.
Well, I want to talk about that a little bit, right?
Yeah.
Like, okay. Like, you talked about that as a long time, and you've proven on this podcast all the time how long you have been watching the Padres, paying attention to the Padres. And I will say that I often, you know my disdain for social media and yes. my disdain / pet peeve of everything being the biggest and the greatest and the instant hot take. But, mm-hmm. you know, I can, not that it's my place to forgive, but I can abide Padres fans who get super excited over a moment like this or over a winning team because of what you mentioned, right? But anyway, I'm a huge Jackson Merrill. I mean, huge. I just think he's phenomenal. And I almost think you can't overstate his importance to this team. But just like I always say about the difference between Hall of Famer and future Hall of Famer is one of them's in the freaking Hall of Fame and one of them might be. So give some respect. Let's give some respect to Fernando Tatis Jr. Jackson Merrill has not done what Fernando Tatis Jr. has done yet. And Jackson Merrill will be the first person to tell you. And so, like, I mean, he may end up being the guy who gets the statue, right? Maybe both of them will. I don't know. Seems like the statues start being getting pretty crowded since Manny's probably going to get one too. So, Fernando, gosh, as long as he can stay on the field, man, that's just crazy how good he is.
Yeah. And again, you see that every once in a while, you know, bubble back up of, here's this guy who does things that nobody else in baseball can do. I mean, he hit a home run in last year's playoffs. I think it was against the Braves. That was, I mean, nobody in baseball hits the ball at that angle that hard. To me, just really impressive. And you know what? The Padres, the larger issue here, Kevin, is this. The Padres, who have been shorthanded since the day Jackson Merrill walked off the field with a hamstring strain, they've floundered a little bit, but they've won 5 in a row. And more importantly, they continue to beat bad teams. And the way the baseball playoff structure is now, if you're a good team and if you can beat the bad teams, you're right in the mix. And absolutely. This is a club that here in the last 3 weeks has swept the Rockies without allowing a single run. They've swept the Pittsburgh Pirates in Pittsburgh. And they get to face the Rockies again here later this week. To me, I don't think that we can sort of emphasize enough how important it is to sort of squirrel away wins against bad teams, because injuries are going to happen and slumps are going to happen. To do what they've done here, I think really sets them up well for the rest of the season. I don't think they have to make decisions based on today, so to speak, so long as they keep beating the bad teams on their schedule. They're going to be right in the middle of it.
You nailed it, and they knew it when they were making those decisions, right? Like, every decision that they have made has been based on, they went into the season saying, provided that we are, you know, who we think we are going to be ultra careful. Right? Always going to be careful. They would argue with me on my wording on this because, well, they always find a way to argue and they don't want to give anything away. But it was always going to be careful with guys because we think we're a playoff team and we need them when it matters. Right? Now, had they been playing the Dodgers this weekend, might it? And we're in August. Mm-hmm. Might they have made some other decisions about Jackson Merrill? Maybe. I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I haven't asked anybody. But you are absolutely correct. Like, how fortuitous that this rash of injuries that I would argue with Tom Krasovic were as bad as any team. And Tom made some great points about the starting pitching that some contenders have lost. But in terms of hitting this team and the crucial players, I would argue as bad as anybody. But you know what? Mm-hmm. You do have some other good players, and you got to play the Rockies 3 times and the Pirates 3 times. And let me tell you about the Pirates. All right. The Padres have won 9 straight against the Pirates. And I would say that in every one of those games, for whatever heroics, Jackson Merrill last year, like basically, I think 2 of the 3 games here in Pittsburgh, Tatis that we've already talked about. And I would say whoever else drove in big runs in those 9 straight victories. And those 6 were crucial last year. When you're talking about playoff positioning. The Pirates did something or some things in every single game that made you go, yeah, yeah, this is why they're about to have their 10th straight losing season, right? Like, I don't watch them all the time, but here I've watched them, you know, six times last year, three times this year, and they just make dumb plays, lazy plays, bad plays, whatever. Like, whatever. And then, look, we watched enough bad baseball here, right? You can sympathize with their or empathize even with their fans. But, yeah, you are 100% correct, and especially – but you know this, and I'm going to pop this out every time I can since I'm the guy who spent hours looking it up. One team – what was it, 1969 Major League Baseball? It's mind-boggling that before that, one team from the American League, one team from the National League played in the World Series. That was it. That was the playoffs. I just described the playoffs to you. 1969, they expanded. They've expanded further since then. Since 1969, one team, I believe it was the 2015 Rangers, have made the playoffs with a losing record against non-winning teams.
Right.
You build your record, if you're a playoff team, by beating bad teams. Now, you also generally have a good record against good teams, but you absolutely cannot. It's almost basically proved, except for one team, you cannot have a losing record against bad teams.
Right. I grew up hearing the following phrase in my house, Kevin, if I can name drop my dad for a minute. Well, good teams find ways to win and bad teams find ways to lose. And more often than not, that phrase was spoken about the San Diego Padres finding a way to lose, right? Because it was the 80s, early 90s. But I was struck watching the Pirates, how many ways they have found to lose. When games could go one way or another, when it's teetering there, right? 50-50, teams like the Pirates go that way, right? Teams like the Padres, it seems, tend to take advantage of those opportunities. And that's not
just like the Dodgers used to against the Padres, right? You'd be all fired up for six innings. The Padres are up 2-1 or 5-4. And then something would happen in the seventh inning, right?
Right.
But here's the thing where I'll give credit to Mike Still, the coaches, AJ Preller, the research and development department. They know that a lot of games can be decided that way. And more than I have ever seen, this team is coached up and plays to continually put pressure on teams and then take advantage of what are sometimes you could almost consider forced errors, right? Like, you could almost consider them, whether they should or not. I'm amazed how often a fielder sees a guy like Xander Bogaerts busting his butt down the line and thinks Xander Bogaerts, and I'm not saying he's slow, but thinks Xander Bogaerts faster than he is and rushes the throw. Give Xander and the Padres a little credit for that. Now, yes, that was an error, right? Like, there's a reason it's an unearned run and all that stuff, right? Like, but give the Padres some credit for that. That's winning on the margins. And I love to see it. I love to see the productive outs. I think it's very exciting baseball.
I believe it was yesterday, Kevin, and I think this speaks to it too. Padres had runners on first and second, and just double steal, right? Double steal, yeah. Manny Cruz in the third, surprises the catcher, Henry Davis, so much that Davis fires it to third, not knowing if there's anybody even covering, and Key Brian Hayes has to scramble to even catch the ball, keep it in front.
And that could have been a run, right? Yeah. Right.
And you just don't know between the years doing something like that. And I don't believe it led to any, but doing something like that, you just have no idea how that affects the other team beyond, you know, just, hey, two guys at things, right?
Yep.
Do they get spooked? Does this, you know, all of a sudden, are you checking your runners twice? Are you throwing fastballs instead of your best pitch? You know, whatever happens there.
The Padres believe that, Ryan. That's a good point. The Padres absolutely believe in distracting, rattling, whatever it is, the pitcher. You are right.
Yeah, and to see Manny Machado, and again, nobody's idea of a fast base runner, but a good base runner, right? To see Manny Machado, to see Manny Machado taking third without a throw. I mean, essentially, without a competitive throw.
There are people that'll tell you that he might be one of the best base runners in the league. Now, no one mentions him like that, you know, like casually because of the as you said, the speed, right? But to make the most out of that body and those, you know, that speed, heck yeah. The leads he takes, what he knows the pitcher's doing. I can't say enough about how, and I've always said this, heck, back when Manny wasn't quite the quote-unquote leader he is now, wasn't quite the quote-unquote team player, I would always defend Manny as one of the smartest baseball players that there are.
Right. And this is this takes me to exactly where I want to go. Joe Musgrove had a quote about the overall IQ of this team being high. He mentioned it was higher than last year. That last year, and he was speaking with regards to pitching, right? With last year, they'd say, hey, don't pitch to this guy, work around this guy, and then the guy would end up hitting a home run, right? That this year, he says, the collective IQ is so much better. Hey, I think I agree with him just anecdotally. I mean, watching them, I think that this is a club that is playing smart baseball. Do you notice this sort of on the beat every day? Are they making fewer mistakes? Do you think they're playing smarter than they were a year ago?
Yeah, and they played a year ago smarter than they were before. And to sort of just real quickly, like, talk about that, like, the pitching coach can't go out every time, right? And say, okay, this is what we're going to do with this pitcher. The catcher and the pitcher, there could be signs and all that stuff, but the catcher and the pitcher have to sometimes use their brains, right? The pitcher has to use his brain. And they obviously have a plan before a series, before a game, before an inning, depending on the situation, about certain hitters, and certainly the team's best hitters. And then it's up to the pitcher to execute it, right? Hey, we only pitch this guy this way in this count, and then, you know, whatever. And then the pitcher accidentally leaks one over the plate, right? Mm-hmm. And boom, that's how that guy gets a home run. The Padres, it struck me after Marcelo Zuna, Kyle Tucker this week, this weekend, O'Neill Cruz, and it stands out on the Pirates because O'Neill Cruz is basically the dangerous player. Not the most. He's the dangerous player.
The only. Right.
How well they've done against the other team's best hitters. You're not. Yeah. You're not. Now, here's where it's going to be a challenge. When that lineup has Freddie Freeman, Mookie Betts, and Shohei Ohtani. Still, they were better with those guys last year. But you know what it takes, though? It also takes getting the other guys out. So you have an open base. So that there are two outs when Shohei's up. So, you know, those types of situations, having a lead, there's a lot that goes into it besides, you know, the IQ. But yes, great point. I'm also glad to see you read the newsletter.
Well, you just talked about Freddie Freeman and Mookie Betts. How about Aaron Judge, Cody Bellinger, Paul Goldschmidt, et cetera, et cetera. And of course, maybe their best player this year, Trent Grisham of the New York Yankees. This is a really tough lineup to face. I think they're going to get challenged up and down. I mean, even looking at yesterday, you know, they're starting their top five guys in their order yesterday, Grisham, Judge, Bellinger, Goldschmidt, Jason Dominguez. I mean, those are pretty good top five. And this is a team that could be better, right? I mean, Giancarlo Stanton wasn't in the lineup, et cetera, et cetera. What are they facing here heading into New York?
Yeah, and they're facing good pitchers too. Carlos Rodon tonight. Clark Schmidt tomorrow. Max Fried on Wednesday, provided that, you know, all those games are actually played on those days. The first and the third of those are lefties. That will be four lefties in five games. That's why Luis Camposano's up to be the DH. Yeah, the Yankees. Now, you know, there's some people that think like the Yankees would be the seventh best team in the National League. I don't know about that day in and day out, yeah, they're leading the American League East. Now, they've lost, I believe, Volpe. I haven't seen any reports of that, but he's been out of the lineup after, I think it was Saturday, hurt his shoulder. And so he might not be in this series. For goodness sake, Aaron Judge, right? Was he got 11 homers already? You know, having an Aaron Judge season. By the way, Michael King says Aaron Judge is one of the nicest human beings in the world, one of the most genuine human beings in the world. And if that's coming from Michael King, then I just think that that is, well, first off, I'll tell you it's true. And then I just think that that's significant. So Michael King, after tonight, Nick Pivetta, Michael King on Tuesday, coming back to the Bronx. What Wednesday is Dylan Cease. So the Padres have theoretically their top three guys going too. Like this is pitching matchups this series.
Yep. I know this is small sample size, Kevin, but I have to bring this up because they're playing the Yankees. You see what Trent Grisham's doing this year? He's hitting 296.
I have not looked in the last few weeks, but I was thinking this morning, is he still doing well? Like, what's going on with Trent Grisham?
He's hitting 296. He has 8 home runs already, which is one fewer home run than he had a year ago, all year. His slugging percentage, really good. OPS right now is 979.
All right.
Trent Grisham Again, it's been a month. He could have a bad month just as easily as he could have a good one. But to me, he's the big surprise in this lineup. Not only A, that he's playing every day, but B, that he is playing well. You know, if he could be a, let's say, a 20 home run guy, keep his batting average at like 260, 270. If he could have done that in San Diego, he'd still be playing center field in San Diego, wouldn't he?
Yeah, Jackson Merrill might be the shortstop.
Right?
Like, absolutely. And there was a time, I'll admit it, like, I thought that's who he was going to be, right?
Yeah.
I thought that's who he was going to be. I would have said, oh, yeah, minimum, absolutely, 250, 260, 20, 25. Yeah, sure, absolutely, play some near gold glove or gold glove center field. Right on.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I thought maybe the reason they wouldn't have him is he was going to be too expensive.
Yeah.
turns out he was kind of a throw-in who the Yankees are probably pretty pleased that they get to keep someone from that trade because they gave away a lot. And so I would say, yeah, I think that's one of those where, like, I think he's a good guy. I really was sad to watch how bad he got for the Padres, like the worst hitter by some measures for a couple years in the major leagues. Big postseason moments for the Padres. And so, yeah, good for Trent.
Yeah, he also has a very cool 1970s mustache, which just kind of works now that you're playing for the Yankees. That's just very, it's a good fit there. Yeah, again, his last 2 years in San Diego, he hit 184 and 198. Yeah. I know, batting average not that important.
No, his OPS, when it's that low, it's important.
OPS was 625 and 667. Last year, first year with the Yankees, the exact same thing that he had done his previous 2 years with the Padres, he had 190 with an OPS of 675. He's now hitting 100 points higher with an OPS of 979. Something to watch, I think, in this series, simply because he's a guy who, you know, we all know from a couple years ago.
He found a good fit on a team, obviously, and I haven't looked into it, but like the idea that they're keeping him, and I don't know what he was making, but he was making $5 million last year. And the idea that they kept him, there's always been a lot of promise in Trent Grisham. And so, you know, hey, maybe it's happening.
Yep. He reminds me a little bit, and you're going to roll your eyes at me, but a little bit of Oscar Gonzalez, where you look at him and you go, okay, this is the prime of his career right now, right? Like, this is the prime of his career. He's a guy, he's in his, what, late 20s, Grisham? You know, he's coming into it. There's still a lot of baseball left. If he can do this year, he can make a lot of money and get a lot of years from somebody playing center field, right?
That's been the case for a while, yeah. Yeah, that is.
Super interesting. All right, Kevin, before we go here, Yankee Stadium, I know new Yankee Stadium is not the old Yankee Stadium. But is there something different? I mean, I know that you grew up watching them from afar. Something different about being there as opposed to, say, Citi Field or Pittsburgh?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like I said last time, like the train still goes by. It's got some of the trappings of the last couple Yankee Stadiums. And it's in the Bronx, you know, you're still taking the train. Yeah, absolutely. It's just not, it's modern, right? And as it needed to be. The old one was falling apart. I was there one time when ceiling tiles were falling on people. I remember George Steinbrenner coming out of the elevator, red-faced and mad. Like they had to cancel a game because something was happening with the ballpark. And that was 1998, I believe. So yes, they had to change it or build a new one. It's just not, but look, you come and you see the pinstripes and you see the monuments and generally you see a good team, good fans. It's still pretty cool.
I still think this is a litmus test for the Padres. I'm old enough to think that how you do against teams like the Yankees and Dodgers and Cubs does go a long way toward changing what baseball thinks of you as a team, you know?
Sure.
You're on the East Coast. Yankee Stadium and sweep. It's huge.
However much the whole like East Coast bias might get overplayed or overused by people on the West Coast, it's real. And especially in New York, like everything that happens in New York is just bigger. Mm-hmm. Everybody from New York thinks everything about New York is bigger and better. So yes, you come in and you win a series or someone has a big series or what have you, like absolutely. It is a litmus test. That's what I'll say. But in terms of perception, heck yeah. I mean, heck yeah. Like, you come here and it's just bigger.
Right. And do you think it's bigger to the players involved too?
It can be a little bit. Like it's, right. I think what it is one of those that the pros like love it. They love playing here. They, mm-hmm. but they're able to keep it for real in, mm-hmm. in perspective. But do you enjoy if you came away with like a 3-homer series and your team won the series? Do you enjoy having done that at Yankee Stadium? I absolutely believe it. And you cannot not feel it that you're in New York. It's virtually impossible.
And this is another reason why taking care of business against bad teams, I think, really helps. Because, you know, all of a sudden, hey, even if they only win 1 of 3 at Yankee Stadium, they're still sitting on a 4-2 road trip heading to Denver. That's a good place to be, right?
Go 2-1 how, like, and you're 6-3.
Right, exactly. Yeah, yeah. And I mean, to me, that's big. I don't know how Mike Shilton or people internally sort of break the season down into chunks, but if you can come back from a road trip and, you know, they have not been a good road team, if you can come back from a 3-city road trip, 6-3, oh, I mean, that's as good as you can hope for, I think.
Yes. It's funny. Mike breaks it down, I think, monthly. They have meetings monthly, but he also is Mr. Big Picture and is also one game at a time. So I'm not sure how Mike really, truly breaks it down.
That's funny. Well, that'll do it for this episode of the Hot Lava Podcast, Padres Yankees 3-game series at Yankee Stadium. Again, be sure to be checking our website, the UT's website, for weather updates, delays, anything like that. There is rain in the forecast starting tonight. For Kevin Acey, I'm Ryan Finley. We'll see you next time.